Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Stormy Bonantoni of VSiN of ESPN will join us. We will go over the day that was in the NFL, look ahead to the Monday night games, and we got two of them. And the NFL is where we will start, and there were some wild games. We did have a bunch of blowouts, and my pick continued to just be awful. I need to turn it around quickly here. Packers getting the ball first, that whole angle has been good, but that can only take you so far. Jeez, can I pick a winner otherwise? Man, it's been rough. But a bunch of blowouts on Sunday, a handful of blowouts, you know, Bills and Jets, Bears and Lions, you know, Seahawks-Steelers wasn't really competitive towards the end. There were a number of blowouts, but we had some of the wilder games we're ever going to see. Really three or four of them. Giants, Cowboys, that's a once-a-year type of game. Just insane how that game unfolded. Jags, Bengals, the Bengals not only winning that game, and Burrow gets hurt. And we can discuss that too because their schedule coming up is tough, although they seem to play pretty well when Burrow is out. Browning is a very solid backup, but the Jags not only not winning that game, but not covering that game. The 3.5 is just a brutal pill to swallow after a drop. Patriots Dolphin was wild. But the big story of the day, and then the later games, you had two absolutely crazy games. But to me, the big story here is the Chiefs, just because they're the Chiefs. It's Mahomes, it's Andy Reid. They've won all these Super Bowls, and they are now, I think, in real, real danger of missing the playoffs. They're 0-2. They don't have a lot of weapons. And give Philly credit. Philly's still a really good team. I would not be surprised at all. Now, if you made me pick right now, if you made most people pick right now, I think you say, hey, pick an NFC Championship game. I think most people would pick Philly versus Green Bay. I mean, you can't rule out Detroit. I guess you can't rule out Minnesota. I mean, it's week two. You can't rule out a lot of teams. But I think right now, you know, Philly-Green Bay would be the favorite for the last two teams standing, just based on what we saw last year and the development of Green Bay and how good Philly still is. But the story for me is the Chiefs, because not only are they 0-2, and you do get the Giants next week. You figure that's, let's say, a layoff, because the Giants were feisty this week. The Giants have some players, and the way the Chiefs are playing, especially on offense, nothing's a layup. But even if you give the Chiefs that one next week, and if you don't, you know what, you can really start to question their ability to make the playoffs. But after that, Ravens at the Jags. Jags got some weapons. Lions, all the division games are tough with the Raiders, the Broncos, another game against the Chargers. They play the Commanders, who are pretty good. At the Bills. Bills always beat them in the regular season. Colts, Cowboys, Texans. This is a brutal schedule. And again, you still got five division games, and those five division games are not easy because the Raiders, the Chargers, and Denver are all pretty solid teams and all much improved. So this might just be the year, and you never want to count out Mahomes, but this just might be the year where they go, you know, anything other than like 9-8 seems disrespectful. But 9-8 and either miss the playoffs, or, you know, 9-8 and make the playoffs and lose in the wild card round, I think that could be the kind of year you're looking at for the Chiefs. I just think that you've already got two games here in the loss column. And here's the other thing too. The ball bounced their way so much for so long, especially last year. And you know what? That stuff just eventually evens out. There's no guarantee it's going to even out that year, the next year, or whatever. But it does seem like it's starting to even out a little bit. Kelce last week, down 9, stops running. And instead of a touchdown, they settle for a field goal. Can't get off the field. They lose a one-score game. Today, they're driving. They're down by 3. Kelce has what looks like it's going to be a touchdown. Not only does he drop it, but it goes in the air. It gets intercepted and gets returned for 50 yards. And they end up, Philly ends up scoring a touchdown, and it's not enough for the Chiefs. They can't get the ball back, and the Eagles win a one-score game. So already 0-2 in one-score games, you just feel like that is catching up to them a little bit. And again, they still got a bunch of primetime games, a bunch of tough games. The Chiefs here, it'd be interesting when these numbers reopen. Their number to miss the playoffs, I think, is a very, very distinct possibility. Now, Brady and the Patriots didn't have a lot of them. The 1 year Brady got hurt in 08, and that's a natural comparison, the Brady-Patriot run with the Mahomes-Chief run. While the Patriots went a decade without winning the Super Bowl, they didn't really miss the playoffs too much. The 1 year Brady got hurt in 08, they missed it. In 02, the year after their first Super Bowl title, they had a good team, but they missed it that year too. And then they basically made it every other year Brady was healthy and with the Patriots. So it was just those 2 years. But the AFC, there's a lot of competition. Their schedule's tough. And maybe they just run into a year where the ball doesn't bounce their way, similar to San Francisco last year where, you know, year in, year out, you're in the Super Bowl, the conference title game. That's just a lot of wear and tear, and maybe age, injuries, you know, Worthy's banged up. Kelce's older. Mahomes doesn't have a lot around him. Mahomes missed a bad throw today with Thornton where he was wide open and they could have gotten that touchdown. They got it anyway, but they could have got it earlier and maybe gotten the ball back. I thought Reed was very shaky punting fourth and seven, about 6.5 minutes left in the game. I know if you don't get it, the game's probably over, but when you're down 10, when you're down two scores, middle of the fourth quarter, past the midway point of the fourth quarter, you're going to have to convert a fourth and seven probably at some point anyway. I thought that was very shaky with how good Philly is at matriculating the ball and picking up first downs. I would not have just voluntarily given the ball back. I know they got it back and they got a stop eventually and got a touchdown, but you put yourself in a position where you had to get the onside kick or get a three and out. And Philly's just so good in that short yardage where I would have gone for it there. I thought that was a mistake by Reed. So keep an eye on that. The Chiefs, to me, are a major story. The other one, I'll go with the Jags just because that was such an awful loss. That was so bad. They had a chance to be 2-0. And if you look tomorrow night, Houston's got a game where I actually like them tomorrow night. And not that that means anything the way my picks are going, but you could have been two games up on Houston. You could have been tied with Indy, and Indy got completely lucky to get away with that one today. But that's a bad loss. Jacksonville could have been one of the nice stories in the year, sitting here at 2-0. They should have been 2-0. They get a drop late. They give up a touchdown, and then they blow that game. Just an awful, awful loss for Cincy. And same thing with the Giants, where they give up the field goal after the touchdown to Neighbors. Wilson threw a horrible interception in overtime. I know you want to give your receiver a shot and just throw that deep ball and let Neighbors go get it, and maybe you get a catch, maybe you get a flag, but that was basically just a pop-up to center field. That ball had no chance, and just a, I don't know if it was a miscommunication or just an overthrow, but a terrible play by Wilson to just give the ball away there. And I would notice one thing, too, from a betting perspective, as I'll get to my picks here in a second for Monday night, for people looking to fade them, I'm sure. Dallas was plus 950, down by three with 15 seconds left. And I noticed it Saturday, too, with the Georgia-Tennessee game. And we had an incredible, incredible sports weekend. Georgia-Tennessee was great. Texas A&M Notre Dame was great. We had a boxing match that people went to. I mean, they started it. Why don't you just start it at 3 or 4 in the morning so nobody can watch it? I mean, it was ridiculous to start that thing at basically 1:15 in the morning or whenever it was. And you got music and introductions, which is part of the fun of boxing, but can you get it going? But nonetheless, great sports weekend. All the baseball, Mets with a big win. I mean, it was just a fun sports weekend. The games were awesome. I will say that the one thing, too, is as I'm checking to make sure the number was right, yeah, plus 950 with 15 seconds left for this one. And Georgia-Tennessee, Tennessee was minus 700 at the end of regulation, about to kick a field goal to win the game. It was like a 42, 43-yarder. That was not a gimme. So I think if you keep an eye on it, exciting game. At the end of the game, people want to watch the game. You're not necessarily locked in your apps and checking the odds. You either have your bets and you're just letting them ride or whatever. I don't know that these bets are priced properly at the end of the game because Dallas is indoors. You know, these teams start at like the 25-yard line. If you get to midfield, Aubrey can make that kick. They never should have been plus 950. Of course, it's easy for me to say that after the fact, but I did text some of the guys in the group chat. Bear and Gill and some of those guys like, wow, Dallas is plus 950. They still had 15 seconds left with the NFL. That's 2-3 throws. You get out of bounds. You kick a long field goal. Then you're back in overtime where it's a coin flip and you're even the favorite because you're the home and the better team. So keep an eye on that. These spreads, these money lines live late in these games, I don't think they are priced properly. Dallas and the Giants is one example. And Georgia and Tennessee in college is another example. Just assuming the field goal is good or assuming because the team's up three with 15 seconds left that the game is over. Those are ones where there's, I think, some really good betting opportunities. Before we get to Stormy here in a second, the late games, Arizona almost, and it's crazy. You know, these games have been wild, but Arizona almost not only blowing the cover, but almost losing the game. As crazy as these games have been, everyone's survivors intact because we haven't gotten any upsets. Seahawks, 3-point dog. This week, they win. Last week, the Raiders, like 2.5-point dogs. Last week, the Chargers were 3-point dogs. Those were the only three underdogs we've gotten. So as crazy as these games have been, we haven't gotten any upsets. I'm sure the books are not doing well here because people just, you know, playing the favorites, money line parlaying the favorites, those are all pretty much getting home because there have been no upsets as we record this before. Falcons and Vikings just underway here. So that is one takeaway here where everyone's still in Survivor unless you forgot to turn in your pick, unless you went really super contrarian and got way too cute, which there's been a lot of. You're still in because nobody has been eliminated here. It's been very strange, the lack of upsets through 2 weeks. But before we get to Stormy, I thought another takeaway here, that was just an awful call here. And I'm not going to recap every game here just because there was a lot going on this weekend. The Colts do one of the stranger things. They play for a 60-yard field goal. They're down 2 points. They get the ball back. and they basically just run the ball into the line. They have a minute 43 left. They have plenty of time to get closer and try to kick a 30, 40 yarder, whatever, walk off, make it manageable, make it pretty makeable. They settle for a 60 yard kick and they miss and they lose, and they deserve to miss and they deserve to lose because that's a terrible process. But what do you know? The flag comes out. They call leverage for pushing the center. I still have not seen the replay. Unless it's completely egregious, I hate the call. I just hate the idea of a bailout. Just the principle there that you're going to settle for a 60-yarder, and then we're going to give you another opportunity to not only kick it again, but kick it 15 yards further. Look, blame Denver too. If it was a legitimate call, which again, I haven't seen it since. I haven't seen it. And you know, you show 10 people at the bar, 10 football fans at the bar, 8 or 9 of them aren't even going to know how to evaluate that call. So again, there's so many rules in football. I hated the idea of it. I hated that's how the game was decided. I hated giving another opportunity that was such a bad process, such a bad decision by Steichen and the Colts. That whole process of just settling for a 60-something yard kick. I know these guys are capable of making them, but being capable of making them and actually just going out of your way to settle for it and say, all right, we got a 60-yarder. We're good. We'll just kick this and we'll win and go home. I hate it, and I hate they got bailed out, which I've said here. I keep mentioning. So that was a wild ending. Cardinals almost losing that to the Panthers. That's another one where just flag after flag continued to come out. At some point, you know, just let them play the game. They call the roughing the passer on Sweat where he just fell on the guy. That was not a roughing, but no harm, no foul, unless he laid the points, because that was a wild comeback to even cover the spread. That would have been one of the wilder comebacks. I know we've seen a bunch of them. Bills, Ravens, that would have been crazier than Bills, Ravens, because the Panthers looked dead. They were way behind, and then you're sitting there after getting an onside kick, which nobody gets onside kicks anymore, with a chance to stick the ball in the end zone and win the game. So a wild day of the NFL, even though we got a bunch of blowouts. The 3 or 4 games that we got that were wild were absolutely just, it makes you question betting on this league because it's so dependent on the refs. It's just so much randomness to it, as I mentioned last week. But 2 games for Monday night here as we look forward to. And I like the fact that we get 2. I mean, it does keep you up later. It is a little bit, I don't know. It's a weird dynamic, but the fact that you start one of them at 7, I don't like when you play 2 at the same time. 1 at 7, 1 at 10, I actually like. I think it's fun. Tampa and the Texans, it's a fun game. It's a good game. Texans looking to avoid 0-2. I will take the Texans. I'll lay the 2.5 here at home against the Bucs. I just think these teams are equal enough where I'll take the home team. I'll take the more desperate team. Bucs are 1-0. Bucs were pretty lucky to win last week. I watched pretty much every play of that game against the Falcons. Baker was not good. Atlanta dropped a million interceptions. Atlanta missed a field goal at the end that would have sent it to overtime. Atlanta had chances to score a touchdown where the receiver didn't get his head around. I think that was a little bit of a misleading final. I think Houston figures out a way to get the game at home. And Houston could have beaten the Rams last week. The guy fumbled for them. Awungabali fumbled for them late where they were driving to perhaps win that game. So pretty equal teams. I'll take the home team, the more desperate team. I'll lay it with the Texans. And Chargers, Raiders, I don't have a great feel for. I would lean towards the Raiders getting the 3 just because I do think they're underrated. With Genty and Bowers and Smith, I know Bowers is beat up here, but it looks like he's going to play. If he practiced Saturday, he's probably going to play. I just think close game, take the home team, take the points. But again, I am not exactly seeing the ball well here in the NFL or swinging the bat with a lot of confidence. So take that with a grain of salt. I'll get it turned around. I'll get a better feel for these games as the season goes, but I don't feel like I have a great feel for these teams. So I do like the Texans. I lean towards the Raiders. We will see what Stormy Bonantoni thinks. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. Very excited. A first-time guest. You can catch her on ESPN, VSiN, Money Moves. She is an international star, and she joins us now as the great Stormy Bonantoni. Stormy, what's going on? How was your Sunday?
International star is something that no one has ever referred to me as until now and probably never will after today, but I love it, so thank you. But that'll be short-lived, something tells me. But my Sunday was good. It's been busy. I had to fly back to Vegas this morning from my game last night. I was at Cal Berkeley doing the late window ESPN game. And then I flew to Circa this morning on a 5-something a.m. flight to be doing the countdown to kickoff show on VSiN in the morning. We were on the air for 4 hours. I came home and watched as much of the afternoon slate as I could until I absolutely died and fell asleep. And now I'm here and you're catching me up on what happened the last 10 minutes of a handful of these games.
Yeah, the games were wild. It was a weekly reminder that we're just crazy to bet on this stuff. Cowboys, Giants, insane. Jags, Bengals, how the Jags didn't win, how the Jags didn't cover. Crazy. Even Dolphins, Patriots, which is a weird game, was crazy. But I want to start, even though it wasn't the most exciting game, I think it's probably the biggest story here, and that's the Chiefs being 0-2. They do get the Giants next week, but if you look at their schedule, and look, neither of us, I don't think, are going to sit here and say the Chiefs are done, can't make the playoffs. But I think it has to enter your mind that maybe this is just one of those years where the Chiefs go 9-8 and either maybe do miss the playoffs or maybe lose in a wild card. Because let me read you the rest of the schedule and I'll get your thoughts. Mm-hmm. They still have to play. They get the Giants next week. We'll see. After that, Ravens at the Jags, the Lions, all their division games are hard. The Commanders, the Bills, you know, Broncos, Colts, Cowboys, Texans, Chargers, Broncos again at the end of the season, the Raiders. What do you look for with this Chiefs team? Is it possible now that this Chiefs team does miss the playoffs?
It's crazy how we're already seeing at the beginning of the season the, I don't want to say luck, but the close game factor has already caught up with Kansas City with how many close games they ended up on the right side of last year. And I mean, the last couple years, to be honest. But that would definitely concern me. To start the year 0-2, I think is pretty shocking, but people did think that the Chargers had the potential to take a step this year and be good, and the Philadelphia Eagles are the defending Super Bowl champions that, quite frankly, whooped you in that Super Bowl a year ago. So I don't necessarily think 0-2 was out of the question, but as you look at the schedule moving forward, it's tough. I mean, even that game next week against the Giants, who is this freaking Giants team all of a sudden? The way that their offense is dialing stuff up, I'm pretty stunned. And that's going to be a primetime game for us all to watch on Sunday Night Football this coming week. I don't think it's out of the question that they miss the playoffs, which is, again, they've won, what, 9 straight AFC West titles, too? That's now in doubt. But I feel like Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid still just find a way. So I don't want to go out there and necessarily put my money on it either. Even if they start becoming an underdog role in a handful of these games, that's just going to entice people to bet them even more in the underdog role. Travis Kelce's final year, they get Xavier Worthy back. They're going to get Rashee Rice back at some point. So I'm sure things will start to come together a little bit better. But it looks oddly bleak here to start the season.
So I think the Chiefs being 0-2 is the biggest story. From all of these other games today, and I know you're in recovery mode on Sundays.
Yes. I'm such a mess.
As you do this show with JVT on Monday and you start to plan your show, in your mind, I'll give you the floor, in your mind, what is like the second biggest story? Your biggest takeaway from today is what?
It's honestly, it's very tough for me because when we were on the air for the morning slate, we were sweating out like 50 things at once. I think the ending to Giants Cowboys is so significant for so many reasons because the Cowboys were a very highly bet team this week and they were a survivor play. And for them to somehow squeak out a way to force overtime with the Aubrey field goal and then ultimately win in overtime against the Giants, I think is notable. Especially because people were asking, like, is that New York team legit and are they going to be able to do stuff with Russell Wilson? Like, we thought based on the performance we saw week one that was going to be a hard no. And then here they are dialing up, putting up 37 points, which also raises the question of how bad is this Cowboys defense really? Because that's going to be a huge issue. The news that the San Francisco 49ers got also that Purdy's injury might not be as significant as initially believed. I think that's another one that's big because we look at all of these look-ahead lines and scheduling, and this past week we saw how significant that was for the 49ers against the Saints with Mac Jones starting. They still end up winning and covering that game on the road, but if Purdy is back sooner rather than later, I think that's a big one. And I guess another one, and sorry, I know this isn't answering your question. I'm just kind of going through the list here of games that really intrigued me. The Aaron Rodgers we saw week one in terms of the 4 passing touchdowns and maybe the dink and dunk stuff, the synergy that was created with Arthur Smith wasn't for real after all. And that's something JVT tried to talk me into, quite frankly, all week. And I was like, no, I think Aaron Rodgers is, it's going to work. It's legit. And it's still only 2 weeks in, but for them to not only lose to the Steelers and not perform offensively, but for 2 weeks in a row, that Steelers defense that we have been touting as being very good to give up 31 points to the Seahawks is significant.
You know, it's interesting. I was just mentioning how these games are just so random and they're crazy and they're hard to bet on. That being said, we're through 2 weeks here, and then the Sunday night game is about to start as we're recording this. There haven't really been any upsets. The Seahawks were like a 3.5 point dog. They won. The Raiders last week were like a 2.5 point dog. They won. What was it? Oh, the Chargers beat the Chiefs. Is like a 3.5. I think a 3 point dog. We haven't gotten anything in Survivor where if you're not in Survivor, you either forgot to turn in your pick or you went way, way too cute. You got really contrarian. So it's crazy that we really, despite all of these crazy games, we haven't gotten any upsets. Who did you have in Survivor on Sunday? What is your Survivor status right now? How many entries do you have?
Three, one with JVT and two with my dad, and we were on the Ravens for two of them and the Cardinals for the other. So we're still alive through a couple weeks. And although the ending of that Panthers game got a little bit dicey. Wait, what did you think? My goodness.
I didn't think, because we were waiting for that to end to record. I didn't know if we were ever going to record. They just kept throwing flags every time. I think it was Ron Torbert, the official, a roughing. And that was a weak roughing where he just lands on Bryce Young. I hated that call. I hated the call. You know, as I mentioned in my opinion, I hated the call in the Broncos Colts where, you know, they miss a 60-yard field goal. They settle for a 60-yard field goal and he completely bailed out with the leverage. That bothered me. But no, that was just a wild ending. And I do think, you know, I think it was smart to go with Ravens because I think VEASAN's probably partially to blame for this. And there's so much betting content out there. People are so quick to be cute and go contrarian. And I'm going to pick an upset. I'm going to pick a road team. I get you got to do some of that and you don't want to be on the most obvious team. But when everyone's going contrarian, you probably should just pick the obvious team because people get really too cute with this stuff thinking, oh, I'm going to take the Patriots in week two or I'm going to take, you know, Miami in week one. To me, it's gotten – we've overthought this just as a whole together where, you know what, just survive, advance, and worry about being contrarian later.
Well, and I think another thing too is everybody takes – and I think Circa and VEASAN, another reason for this is everyone takes – the schedule for teams that are playing on Thanksgiving and on Christmas and overreacts to that and thinks it over, but like teams are going to be so different by that time and you have to make it to Thanksgiving or Black Friday or Christmas to even have an opportunity. And that's kind of where we were coming from this week is I know that the Browns defense played well last week, but there's some sort of voodoo magic with the Cleveland Browns and Myles Garrett against the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow. There just has been. Those games have always been close. Browns defense has played Joe Burrow really well. And so, honestly, that's a big reason why I was interested in not only the Ravens this week, but the Bengals team total, as I mentioned earlier, because I felt like Cincinnati in a bounce back after having played the Browns would be able to score points. Did not expect to have Joe Burrow knocked out of said game and have to rely on Jake Browning for that. So that was stressful. And I guess as we talk about top stories, yeah, let's find out the update on Joe Burrow. There was a time period as we were watching games that I was like, are we going to lose Josh Allen and Joe Burrow today? So thankfully, Allen was okay, and he ended up going back in. But Joe Burrow, what's ever going on with his toe, hopefully is short-lived. And especially for – you were a part of the VEASAN Pro Football Futures draft we took. A lot of people went heavy Burrow, heavy Cincinnati Bengals in that one. If Burrow isn't a part of the equation or misses time for a little bit, that's going to take a hit.
I don't remember being part of the Futures draft. That's just for the big stars of VEASAN. I was not – I watched it, but I was not involved.
Oh, that's why it was on top of my mind. You were texting me during it, yes, Making fun of my selections as well.
I was not. I was asking about your, I think your credentials in the background is what.
Oh,
I was
asking
about. Monday night games. We get two of them. I kind of like this. I mean, it's a late night if you're from the East Coast with the second game. Probably not starting until 10:15. But Texans are laying 2.5 to the Bucks. 2.5 is the spread. 42.5 is the total. Do you like anything? Do you have anything in this early game Monday night?
I have the Bucks in teasers. I had the Bills to win as kind of a foundational leg for a handful of teasers, and I have the Bucks in that spot. But I think they can win that game against the Texans. I understand that this Texans defense feels so elite, and Tampa Bay had a little bit of a slow start out the gates last week. But C.J. Stroud's offensive line is abysmal. And they have some serious problems over there as well, to where I'm not so sure that what we saw from Houston last year was a fluke and was injuries. I think they could have a tough time, and I know the Bucks are on the road, but getting 2.5 points there, I neared making a bet on that, but I ended up just to you know, sometimes you just want to have more wiggle room and have a comfort play. I felt like that was a good teaser. Like, you get through all of the key numbers on the 3 and the 7, bring it up. So I played it that way pretty hard, actually. That's one of my favorite teasers. So I will be extremely disappointed if it doesn't come through.
Where is the best place for teasers in Vegas? Because I hear people that live in Vegas all the time complaining it's going up, 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 $1.30, $1.35, $1.40. Is there anywhere to get a good teaser price in Vegas? Or what's the best?
Dude, it's terrible. I think, where did I do the 125? It might be BetMGM. Okay. It's funny how it all blurs together, though, when you have all of the apps. I'm like, which one did I end up actually placing it with the teasers? But you're dead on. Like, there are some sports books that I love, and I don't want to name names here, but it's -140 for a 2-leg 6-point teaser, and that's disgraceful. I can't, you know, it's just, it's very unfair. Something that I know I've talked about with Matt Brown at VSiN and Mike Somich and some others, though, is another way you can approach it if you don't feel like you want the, or you need the full 6 points for some of these bets. You can do just the adjusted parlays that you can put together, the adjusted spread parlays, and that's another way, just like move it 4 points or move it 3 points, whatever gets you to the number that you feel comfortable with so that you don't have to pay as steep a price. But yeah, these 6 point teasers that we've loved for such a long time, the ease of betting them at -110 is gone.
How about the second game? Chargers laying 3 to the Raiders, total 46.5. Battle of the teams that really don't have home field advantage whenever they play home games, so that's interesting. Bowers, questionable, practiced a little bit Saturday, but he missed a lot of practice during the week. I think he obviously matters. I lean to the Raiders. I don't have a great feel for this game. Do you?
So that's interesting. I would love to hear you talk me through it a little bit, because I lean to the Chargers. That hook is what kept me off of it. I was buying what I was seeing in Brazil. And then you have the added rest a little bit for this game. The travel is so minimal. It is a team that you're extremely familiar with. Even though I know the coaching staff is different this year, it's people that you see all the time. And I feel like the way that Jim Harbaugh likes to build a team is a way that can have success against the Raiders. But I didn't ultimately get to the window and place a bet on it. I just like this Chargers team. Like, they were the one for me when everybody was really hyping up the Broncos in the AFC West that I thought if there was a team to overtake it, it would be the Chargers in year two under Harbaugh taking that next step up.
I kind of like the Raiders. I think it's such a tough division. You still, like, the Chiefs are still the Chiefs, even if they're a diminished version and they're 0-2. Chargers, the Broncos. I think the Raiders with Genty, with Geno Smith, with Bowers, that's a nice little trio. I don't know that they have more than like 9 or 10 win upside in like a wild card, but I wouldn't be shocked if this Raider team made the playoffs. They're pretty good.
I think so too, but I also have a tough barometer, and the only time that we've seen them is against a New England Patriots team that I don't think is particularly good. Speaking of that, like, we kind of glossed over it a little bit. What a back and forth weird game that was with Miami today. Every time I looked up at the scoreboard, they're trading scores. What was that?
I thought, because I was watching another game and following that one on my app, I thought this can't be right because they just scored and now the other team scored. That was very bizarre. Typical NFL.
And then there's a return that's run back, right. And then there's this crazy play.
What is your process for catching up on all these games? Because you're doing so much with ESPN sideline, and then, you know, Sundays you're pulled in a lot of different directions, I guess you'd say. What is your process? Like, how do you catch up?
Well, first of all, I'm very mad that I passed out as long as I did. So that's already step one. I'm too slow to the game right now. But I have the NFL Plus subscription. So you can go back and sift through games, and they have the condensed 30-minute versions of all of these games that I can go through. I box score check. I also, one of the perks of working at ESPN is I have access to their sports and information group stats. So I'll kind of skim through some of that information internally, which will really help me. I'll go to VSiN.com and see some of the reactions. I always look forward to Bill AD's daily newsletter to catch me up on anything that I might miss too that's significant with a betting twist. We have so many resources too in betting, and not only VSiN and everything that we have, but, you know, like, Action Network does a great job with some of the content they put out, and there are all these places that, like, Evan Abrams from Action Network just puts out all of these random stats and information just like Steve Mackinnon, but they're always different. So there's so many great people that we can follow in the space that I feel like if I miss something watching it live, there's always a way to catch up on it. But it is important to me to go back and watch highlights to see specifically what a guy looked like and how some of these plays, specifically scoring plays, happened, how a drive happened, because you know how much you miss when you're just box score flipping and looking at some of these numbers. Like when we were on the air, I think a great example is the Seahawks-Steelers game, because for the longest time, this was a one score game or tied at 14, but Seattle was outplaying the hell out of them. And if you miss those types of things, you're not going to be good handicapping the following week. So, yeah, it's a lot of information to come in a short time. You do it for betting. The one thing that just changes my routine a little bit more than others is the travel that comes and then finding out my next week for ESPN on short notice. For example, I did my game late last night at Berkeley. I found out this morning, right before we went on air, where I'm going this week. And so finding out that information, and if it's a team I haven't covered before and I don't have a baseline of notes for or anything like that, diving into those rosters to have the quick turnaround to make my interview requests and all of that stuff early in the week, that's what kind of messes up my schedule a little bit.
When you're working Saturdays, do you have a feeling like you're missing out, that you can't watch the other games sometimes?
Yes, I do. And that's tough too. But the nice thing about working the late games recently is I can watch a good bit of the early slate before I have actual game work duties that I have to do. So I got to watch the bulk of the Clemson-Georgia Tech game. I got to see the bulk of Georgia-Tennessee and a handful of those early games, which was great to multitask with some of the stuff that I had to do before I went to the field.
So if your game, say your game is, what time was it last night? Probably like a 7:15 Pacific game. What time do you have to get to the stadium, get to the field?
I get picked up around like 4:15.
Okay. And then what's your process? You go to the stadium and then what? You prep or you just kind of hang out and there's somewhere for you to watch the games? Like what? Take us through the day. Like what is that
so
like?
So that's when I'm in scoreboard watching mode, or sometimes I'll be able to catch a little bit if my A2 has an iPad up, or if I'm up in the booth for a little while, they've got extra monitors and stuff. But that's usually when I get to the field. I go up to the booth with the play-by-play and analyst. We make sure that we have all of our stuff. The sports information directors from each school will come in, re-go over pronunciations, let us know if the coach gave them any heads up on injuries and stuff that haven't been announced to the public yet. I go down to the field when everybody's warming up, make sure all the guys who I was told are there are actually there, because I've gotten dogged like that before. I did a game where I'm told by a sports information director, no changes, everything's good. And then the starting center for that team was in street clothes. The national defensive player of the week that week apparently broke his leg the day before and they didn't tell anybody. And a coordinator who was supposed to be there was in the hospital. So I'm glad I have a checklist and I make sure everything's there. I go around, I talk to people on the field, I talk to assistant coaches, I make sure I meet the trainers, I find out where the nearest hospital is that should something terrible happen, I know where they're being taken. There's a lot of like little stuff you do on game day walking around before you start that's more just like checklist, making sure that everything's buttoned up type of stuff I have to do.
Yeah, and I don't know if you probably weren't following this, but there was a lot of back and forth of Simmons, the Ole Miss quarterback. Will he play? Wouldn't he? Most people didn't think he would. Most people thought it'd be the backup. The market thought it was the backup. And then a buddy of mine was at the Ole Miss game and said Simmons was announced on the Jumbotron, announced as the starter. He's running around like a chicken with his head cut off. He's ready to go. And the game starts and the backup's in there. So there is a lot of that.
Dude, and there's weird gamesmanship stuff too. I did a game where a quarterback was... We were led to believe all week that he was, you know, game time decision, but probably not going to play. Everybody aside from the head coach that we talked to throughout the week told us probably not going to play. And so we're like, okay. But then warm up start and he's fully dressed head to toe. He's warming up with the starting center. And then we notice, what is this? He's throwing with his left hand. So they were trying to he could not throw with his throwing arm because his shoulder was so jacked up. He was just throwing spiral, taking snaps with the starting center, throwing with his left hand, and we're like, this dude's not playing. That's crazy. That's crazy. He didn't play. His backup got hurt on the opening drive, and we ended up on the third string quarterback all game. Crazy.
Wow. Last couple before we get you out of here. College football, just in general, a bet, a future, a Heisman, a thought, whatever, a future. I mentioned in the beginning, I think Miami might be very live here to make a deep run into the playoff. You could have gotten them at 22-1 last week. That number's come down a little bit. Anything that you would recommend in terms of a future, Heisman, anything, take it whatever direction you like.
I mean, yeah, Miami looks pretty good. And kudos to everybody. This was one bet that I was really upset about this weekend. I said on the show repeatedly, and I know there were a lot of people that were in this mindset, that Miami was not going to be overlooking South Florida. They're going to put the hammer down, lay the 17.5. It doesn't matter the number, da-da-da-da-da. And then I didn't end up doing it as a best bet. And, of course, it all happened. It's like one of those things where the games that you're the most right about but you don't actually use as a play are the ones that win, and then the ones that you use as plays don't win. So that feels pretty unfortunate and typical. As far as the national championship, so this is boring. I've thought from the beginning that Penn State was a national championship contender. They're a co-favorite to win, but I think that they're very much so in play. I love what you're talking about with Miami at 16-1. Does Texas A&M look like they could be potentially plucky? Big win for them. I mean, I know it's a shootout, so that leads questions about your defense, but for them to do what they did against Notre Dame's defense, thoughts?
Well, certainly look like a playoff contender. Now that SEC, everyone's going to cannibalize each other, and some of these schedules these teams have are ridiculous. Like Florida, who had big expectations, they're already 1-2, and you look at their schedule at Miami, Texas A&M, I mean, forget it. That coach is going to be, you'd think, in some trouble barring a turnaround.
They're already firing coaches. Virginia Tech, I mean, Brent Pry's gone. Deshaun Foster's gone.
I know. Yeah, it's crazy. All right, last one.
Wait, sorry. I would like to know the number for. Apologies. Utah to make the playoff. Where is that? You can still get Utah to make the playoff plus 225.
I like that.
I love that.
I endorse that play. I co-sign that play. I think that's a playoff team. I think they're the best of the Big 12 teams.
I love you visit that.
It's a good one. It's a good
but
one.
Maybe though, if you think that they're the best of the Big 12 and they win the conference, you might take the plus 380 instead of the shorter number on the playoff. Because how many teams is the Big 12 realistically going to get? But I think Utah's the real freaking deal. I love that team. Utah, Texas Tech this coming week is going to be wild.
No, absolutely. And if you're unsure about it, you know what? You just take a bet, take a unit, and split it between the two. Because I thought the same thing last year. With SMU, yeah, exactly. With SMU, where I was like, you know what, if they're not, they might win the ACC, but if they don't win the ACC, they're not going to get in. Then, you know, you end up like middling yourself where they don't win the ACC, but they do get in because everything around it happened the way it did. All right, last one. You visit a lot of these colleges, a lot of college cities. I asked the Bear, Chris Felica, this last week. He had a long list. I don't know if your list will be that long. Give us the rundown. Best restaurants, best cities for food, best dishes, and any direction you would like in terms of food, some food recommendations for all these college campuses, Ooh. College cities.
So here's the thing. I'm twofold. I'm terrible with names, for one, and I also am a very boring person that a lot of times when I'm traveling, I get there late and I just get Uber Eats to my hotel room like a total bum, which is so bad. I've been better about it the last like 2 years now that I've gotten more comfortable with the job. But I think early on in my career as a sideline reporter, I was so neurotic. I was like, I just need to take notes in the room. I can't go anywhere. Some of the best food I have had though, College Station, which is boring, but just the barbecue. I think college towns and barbecue are what really resonate with me. So College Station, there's this bar restaurant that has like picnic table style inside, and it's all like old wooden. They've got cool memorabilia on the walls. I can't remember what it's called, but it might be the best ribs I've ever had in my life. So I'm ashamed that I can't give you the name of the restaurant for the next time you're out there. That's one. And then the last time I went to Auburn, we fell into a place, I want to say it's called Moe's. We initially were supposed to go to another place in Auburn that's like an extremely popular place, and they didn't open until a certain time and we needed to eat right away. So we smelled barbecue in the area and we ended up walking just a little bit farther down the street and we found this really cool, I'm like 98% sure it's called Moe's, but chicken wings, ribs, you can, the pulled pork, brisket, cornbread. Like, it was just so good, and it's the I don't know how you feel about barbecue, but it's the barbecue sauce that's like a little on the thicker side, And it's got a, it's the sweetness with the pepper. And that type of barbecue for me is just it lights up the taste buds. It's all you could ask for. So I'm gonna be so mad if it's not called Moe's. But
Moe's Original Barbecue in Alabama.
Yes! Let's go. Moe's under the radar. And I don't even remember. See, I remember the name of that place, not the place that was super popular that we were supposed to go and couldn't get into. So there you go.
Stormy, you're the best. I appreciate you coming on. This is long overdue. International superstars, we already established. Where can we find you?
At Storm Bonantoni, not Stormy, because I had too many characters apparently for the Twitter handle. And then at Stormy on Instagram, but with three S's. So like Stormy. And that's because I made my Instagram at like 14 or 15. And that was, you know, just it was what was available. So there we go. Stormy. But yeah, that's where you can find me. Money Moves, VSiN, Countdown to Kickoff, and all that good stuff. Thank you for having me. I'm sorry you got me on a day I was fresh from a freaking nap like a psycho and I'm late like a terrible person. Please know I respect your time. I love and adore you. You're the best. And no more naps for me. Jeez Louise.
Appreciate it. Thanks again. We'll do it again soon.
You're the best.
All right. That will do it. Thank you to Stormy Bonantoni. We will be back Wednesday. We will start to mix in more baseball. These races are getting pretty good. I know I hinted at it in the beginning or briefly referenced the Mets. I think that walk-off win with Alonso hitting a homer. The Reds losing, the Giants losing. I know it's been bad for the Mets. I know they've gotten flashbacks. And to me, that is the most interesting story here these final few weeks is the Mets. And is this collapse really going to continue to the point where they missed the playoffs, which it looked like it might this weekend? But like I said, Giants and Reds not winning, not doing themselves any favor, both losing Saturday and Sunday, Reds getting swept. And now the Mets winning game. I feel like the Mets have better baseball in them. I feel like that this win maybe stabilized them. They go on a little run and they get in. So we will, I know people are like, hey, keep doing baseball. Let's not neglect baseball. I feel like with, boy, there's just so much sports going on that this time of the year, you don't have enough TVs. You don't have enough eyeballs to watch everything that's going on with all the football, the baseball, et cetera. But we will do more baseball this week and going forward as we get near the playoffs. But rate, review, subscribe. Appreciate you guys that have left reviews. Keep them coming. It helps us out big time. We'll be back Wednesday. See you then.